Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Luke, the force is strong with you.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke Bryan.
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that. You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Welcome to another edition of Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Minus the Brian this afternoon, the big guy is off on some much-earned, much-needed vacation, so I am here with Evan on the board. Evan, happy Monday to you, my friend. Appreciate you stepping in and filling in. Rumpus time is indeed over. It seems like we just got some news. Crudy ran down the hallway and told me Elon Musk has bought Twitter. So rumpus time is definitely going to be over. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. $44 billion purchase by the world's richest man. So that was breaking hot off the presses just in the last couple minutes here. So rumpus time is over, but folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian, on Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM, as well as the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. The phone lines are open all hour long. You can join us at 844-967-2789. Going to be without Brian this whole week, but I got some fantastic guests lined up for the rest of the week, including Evan today, as you're filling in on the boards. But there's some news going on here across the state of Wisconsin, and I'm going to dive into it as well. So outside of the Elon Musk headline, I guess you want to call it, we'll see what ramifications that will hold. But we've got a new contender entering the ring for the gubernatorial primary here in the state of Wisconsin, that Republican primary. We had the Bucks win two pretty impressive victories over the weekend. But where I'm going to start, Evan, today is we've got some reporting now. It seems like it was a little delayed reporting, but we've got some reporting now on what the GOP drawn maps that were selected two Fridays ago, back on April 15th, what these maps are going to mean for the state. So it was a Friday news dump 2 weeks ago when the Wisconsin Supreme Court decided to, right before 5 p.m. going into the Easter weekend, choose new maps. There was murmurings all day that day that the decision was going to be coming down eminently, whether it was going to be Friday, right before the end of the day, Monday morning, it was going to be released. And a lot of those headlines got buried then throughout the weekend, 2 weekends ago. It seemed like there was a lot of other news going on last week. And so there wasn't a whole lot of reporting on the maps then, but now we've got some reporting over at the Wisconsin State Journal. And there's some interesting ramifications and how the state media is writing up these stories on the redistricting process, what these maps mean, the headlines surrounding it, I find them a little fascinating. So this is the headline, and I want to get your thoughts on it as well for the listening audience. But the headline is, GOP drawn maps may strengthen Republican advantage, but supermajorities remain a stretch in Wisconsin. Remain a stretch in Wisconsin. That's the part that I find interesting. And Evan, maybe I'll get your take, but do you think that that's, is that the conclusion that you came to? That the GOP-drawn maps may strengthen Republican advantage, but the supermajorities remain a stretch? What do you think about that?
We're splitting hairs. The finest of frog hairs split four ways. I mean, they're bad maps.
I don't think that's splitting hairs, Evan. I really don't. I think it's more of the statewide media wants to kind of provide a silver lining both ways. They want to play both sides. They want to be able to be like, oh yeah, so it's okay. It strengthens a little bit of the Republican majorities, but don't worry, super majorities remain a stretch. The fact that they weren't a stretch in 2020. They weren't, in my opinion. The Voss's entire political agenda in the 2020 elections, outside of the Republican Party trying to reelect Donald Trump in the state, which they failed. Donald Trump lost by more than 20,000 votes. But the other goal that they had as a statewide party was to go pick up enough seats in the state assembly and state senate to have a veto-proof majority, to be able to null and void Tony Evers' veto pen. And they almost succeeded. They picked up state senate districts. But where they failed, they flipped in the Milwaukee area. Democrats flipped Republican seats in the state assembly to the tune that Robin Voss did not have the 66 seats that he needed in the state assembly to make Governor Evers' veto null and void. They just didn't do it. They weren't successful. They picked up the state senate seats in other areas around the state, Green Bay and I believe in the La Crosse, Eau Claire area, if I stand correctly. But they failed to get that supermajority in the state assembly. So it was close in 2020. And if you're telling me that in a 50-50 toss-up map, it comes down to about roughly a percentage point every single statewide election that we've had, coming down to roughly a percentage point, but there's still, even on an election in 2020 that Joe Biden won the state of Wisconsin by more than 20,000 votes, that Robin Voss was only a few assembly districts away from achieving that supermajority. Now, those are on the 2011 maps. Those are on maps that were noted as some of the worst gerrymandered maps in the nation. And they were almost able to achieve that feat. Now, we are going to be talking about Republican maps that were the Wisconsin Supreme Court chose the GOP-drawn state assembly and state senate district lines. About 10 days ago now, this happened. On April 15th. So 10 days ago, exactly. And now what we're getting in the Wisconsin State Journal is a write-up about how, well, supermajorities are still a stretch. It could be worse.
Democracy's fine, you guys.
Don't worry, it's not that bad, is what I really read that headline. So I want to dive into this piece because the author of the piece, Mitchell Schmidt, does do a good job of breaking down the numbers. I just think that I don't know exactly how the Wisconsin State Journal is churning out their headlines, Evan. It seems like, I don't know if the authors of the pieces are ever the ones that create the headlines. I think that this was more of a clickbaity Sunday afternoon, because this was published yesterday in the Wisconsin State Journal. A Sunday afternoon, grab your attention, kind of frustrate everybody on all sides. Click on it. Find out. Because in the piece, the math that Mitchell Schmidt breaks down doesn't seem like it's a stretch, but we'll take your opinion on it. 844-967-2789. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian, on Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM here in Madison. I am broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios on the near west side of Madison. You're also listening to me on the Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, on the eastern swath, as Brian likes to refer to it as. The big guys going to visit the mouse down in Florida. Much needed vacation with the family. So we're holding down the fort here. Evan on the board. But diving into this piece over at the State Journal. Republicans could build on their decade-long hold over the Wisconsin legislature under the state's new 10-year political maps, though securing a veto-proof majority in both chambers may still be a stretch. Okay, so we're diving in here already, Evan. It may be a stretch. Not is a stretch, may be a stretch. In a 4-3 decision on April 15th, the Wisconsin Supreme Court adopted legislative boundaries drawn by state Republicans, reversing the court's previous decision after the U.S. Supreme Court rejected maps drawn by Democratic Governor Tony Evers. Those maps would have maintained but reduced GOP majorities in the legislature. A split ruling by the state's high court last year established the state's next maps would need to be drawn with minimal changes to previous boundaries, which have afforded Republicans nearly unbreakable majorities in both chambers. Now, it's important to note, I'm diving out of the piece real quickly here. Back in 2018, Democrats had more than 50% of the vote across the state. Republicans lost every single statewide election on the ballot in 2018. And still, the maps drawn in 2011 insulated a Republican majority to the point where Voss almost had the ability to pick up a supermajority still in 2020, 2 years later, 2 years after the 2018 elections. Now, diving further down in the piece, we've got John Johnson, research fellow in the Lubar Center for Public Policy Research and Civic Education at Marquette Law School, said an analysis of the new maps using the results of the 2016 and 2020 presidential elections and the 2018 gubernatorial election as a baseline found that if half of voters statewide went for Democrats and the other half went for Republicans, 50-50 split like most statewide elections are, Democratic candidates could expect to win just 36 of the Assembly's 99 seats and 10 of the Senate's 33 seats. Now, Evan, that math, I believe, would mean the Republicans would be only 3 seats away from a veto-proof supermajority if it was a 50-50 split. Using the last three previous statewide elections, 2016, 2018, and 2020 is the baseline. 3 state assembly seats. That is what they're classifying as a stretch to pick up a supermajority. Because the Senate, out of that, 10 out of 33 seats going for Democratic candidates, that's already enough to override a veto in the state Senate. I do not understand who decided to pick this headline over at the Wisconsin State Journal, but 3 assembly seats does not seem like a stretch to me out of the 132 seats in our state legislature. It just, the math there, I don't know how you quite get to the definition of stretch on that one, because it's a very short stretch.
Yeah, just they can't do it now.
If you did that stretch, you probably would not be, say, loosey-goosey. That stretch would not warm you up for a good jog or a workout. It would not be enough of a stretch to get you warmed up. It's a very, very slight stretch. It's almost comparable to maybe putting your feet up. That's about it. That's the stretch being classified by the Wisconsin State Journal for how easy it could be for Republicans to pick up a supermajority in this upcoming election. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Big guy Brian is off for the week, but I got Evan filling in on the board with me today. Taking your calls, 844-967-2789. Got a number of other headlines that we're going to get up to as well, but taking your calls shortly. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. But Brian, it's on that well-needed R&R this week. Evan, have you ever been to Disney World?
Nope. Nope. Wait. Oh, no. No, I've been to Universal.
Universal?
No Disney.
No Disney. I'm a little jealous because now that Disney's bought like Star Wars and Marvel, they're coming up with all these kind of attractions that I would once again... I went when I was a kid. I think the... It was probably 16 or 17 the last time I went with my family.
Yeah.
But now that they've got some of these adult attractions, I almost feel like I got to get back down there. But Brian is going to see the mouse. And so hopefully he's having a great time not listening to this show. But folks, if you are and you want to participate, you can join us on the phones or via text, 844-967-2789. Diving into a piece over at the Wisconsin State Journal, talking about the stretch, quote unquote, that Republicans would need to get a supermajority in the state legislature under the new GOP drawn maps. And some of the other math here done by John Johnson, one of the research fellows at the Lubar Center for Public Policy and Research at Marquette Law School. Republicans would need a 7.2 statewide advantage or 53.6% of the vote in order to have a chance at securing a 2/3 supermajority in the assembly. So that's the aggregate number that he's referencing. But again, it's only 3 assembly districts that they would be off on with the baseline numbers. So I don't know if you necessarily need that full 7.2 advantage across the state. You'd need say that advantage replicated in three assembly districts that are more competitive than the others. It would be a heavy lift, Johnson said. It would be the best sort of Republican year in quite some time, but it's certainly also within reach. So it's within reach, but you'd have to stretch for it. So maybe it's the quote. Maybe it's John Johnson over at Marquette Law School that kind of set up that headline.
Stretch.
But again, baseline being only three assembly seats off, I'm sorry. I haven't myself dove into all of the numbers surrounding these maps, but I got to believe that it can't be that far of a stretch if it's only three state assembly districts that they need to flip in order to get that supermajority if you're taking the baseline numbers. On the other hand here, for Democratic candidates, the party would have to secure a 12.4 statewide victory or 56.2% of the vote to have a shot at winning the 50 assembly seats needed to hold a simple majority in the chamber, Johnson said. Democrats would need a 10.6-point statewide victory to secure a majority in the Senate alone. So we're talking about a 10-point swing to secure the state Senate and a 12.4, almost a 12.5-point spread that Democratic candidates would have to cover in state assembly districts to be able to achieve a 50-vote majority in the Wisconsin State Assembly. Folks, these maps do not seem like the fair maps that a 50-50 state that Wisconsin is should have. But we're going to the lines now. We got Jason in Madison. Jason, what are your thoughts today?
Hey, Luke, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. You're right, though. The math doesn't really add up, does it? Three seats out of 132. That's not even the stretch that make your tucked shirt come out of your pants a little bit.
That's what I'm saying. It's more like stretching to put your feet up.
The thing that I've always heard from Wisconsin voters is that they like people to work together. They like, and polls have said this for years and years and years. They like it when the parties work together. They like compromise. They like the middle. So, are we going to see voters stand up to this and show us that they don't want one party to have total control? I think that's why it's so important that people talk about this issue, because it's one that people can blow off or not understand. And if it's not talked about enough, it'll scoot under the radar and catch people off guard. But I think we have to put our faith in the Wisconsin voters to stand up and maybe change their vote.
Absolutely. And I put my faith in Wisconsin voters, and Jason, it leads to a lot of strenuous election nights, because sometimes I feel like I may have too much faith, because some of these returns, some of the candidates that run here, both statewide, federal elections, and state assembly, state senate districts, it's shocking sometimes that they're the ones that are voters are sending to these offices. And so there's been
absolutely
many election nights where I've sat there and needed to pop a few Tums, maybe pop open a beer, something like that to ease the nerves, because I absolutely do have faith in the voters. But this is, Jason, your call is almost perfectly timed, because it goes right into the next tangent of the headline, also by Mitchell Schmidt over at the Wisconsin State Journal. New Wisconsin legislative maps create more districts with double-digit partisan advantages. So, Jason, more maps, or more of these districts within this map, are going to be even farther extremes. They're not going to be candidates that are looking to try to have competitive general elections. These are going to be districts that are going to be won by a primary vote. So it's going to be the Republican primary or the Democratic primary is going to essentially decide who sends these representatives to the state assembly or state senate. And when you get those more extreme candidates, you're less likely to see that cooperation that you just referenced. We're not. That's my greatest fear, is we're not going to see more cooperation. We're going to see less of it over the next 10 years under these Republican drawn maps.
Yeah, that's why it's critical to talk about, because that's what many Wisconsin voters say they want. I know you're coming to break, but I wanted to throw one thing at you.
Throw it at Matt.
The Tim Michaels running for governor. Okay, I was a young man back in 2004 in Eau Claire when Tim Michaels came into Zorn Arena on UW-Eau Claire's campus and debated against Russ Feingold, and I hope he's improved his debate skills for himself and his family since then, because he just got, you know, Feingold wiped the floor with the guy. So, I'm
Jason,
glad he's running.
You must have been in my head for show prep today, man, because that is the next story that we are getting into. A new contender enters the ring. Jason, appreciate the call this afternoon. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Going to be joined by Jason tomorrow on this great show. But if you want to be like Jason, give us a call. 844-967-2789. We're going to be right back. Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian. Taking your calls, 844-967-2789. The other headline that our friend Jason, host of Let's Get Local on Saturdays and airs out on Sundays as well from 11 to noon, Jason made an excellent point. We've got a new contender in the Republican gubernatorial. Now, I will admit, I did not watch the debates between Feingold and Michaels back in 2004. I was much more into watching cartoons because I was about 10 years old. so it's been I'm not very familiar with Michaels' political past here in the state of Wisconsin. I'll be honest. I knew about him. I know that he's a construction businessman here in the state of Wisconsin. He's flirted with running for statewide office many a times, and I knew that. But I didn't pay a whole lot of attention because I was a pretty young guy back in 2004 when he last ran for U.S. Senate. So I'm getting to know the guy as a candidate. I gotta imagine it's gotta be pretty difficult to run, or at least file all the things to properly run for statewide office without really somebody else taking the wind out of your sails, because last Friday we kind of found out that this announcement was coming. There was the filing for the campaign committee on Michael's behalf, as well as former Governor Tommy Thompson leaked. Well, I don't know if it was a leak or if it was intentional or what, but he essentially said, "Well, I'm not running, but I spoke with Tim Michaels and he's running." And that was before Michaels had anything to say about his candidacy. So it's kind of a little difficult. We knew this was coming since last Friday, but the announcement, the campaign video announcing this, Tim Michaels entering into the Republican gubernatorial primary, got released yesterday, and a little bit of a tease saying big announcement coming. Michaels has done the conservative talk radio circuit today. I've seen multiple conservative news talk stations already circulating the fact that he appeared on their airwaves. So he's doing the rounds, and he's got this video out. So before I dive into the article here about Michaels' candidacy, I wanted to share this video because it's nice, it's compact, it's only 60 seconds long. That's why I find it nice. It goes quick. But Tim Michaels fits a lot in for it being a brief 60 seconds. So, Evan, I'm going to need your help if you could play that Tim Michaels campaign launch or teaser video for us.
Everything we love about Wisconsin is under attack.
Everything.
As an Army commander, I serve God, family, and country. But the media, they say none of that matters anymore. When I was a kid, every day at school, I took the pledge. In the service, I took an oath. But today, people take a knee. When I was 9 years old, my dad handed me a shovel and put me to work. Nowadays, people get paid to sit on the couch.
Yeah, boss. Let's go, boss.
It was a huge insult. But today, you get a pronoun wrong, and the liberals want your head. I'm Tim Michaels. The radical left, they're destroying everything we love about America. And too many establishment Republicans, they're along for the ride. I'm not some career politician. I'm a self-made businessman who doesn't give a rip about the special interests or their money. I'm Tim Michaels. I'm running for governor to turn Madison upside down and take back the freedoms that make Wisconsin great.
Tim Michaels for governor. He'll turn Madison upside down.
What?
So get ready, Evan. You got to secure everything down in the office. That's our job now, because apparently this whole studio is going to get flipped upside down because Tim Michaels is coming. He's like going to shake things up.
How many dog whistles can you cram into one?
I counted at least six.
Some of these Twitter replies are great.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a ton of different reactions down there. But I wanted to share it because I heard it this morning and I was like, oh, this is too good not to share. So this is Brian and I think would have had a lot of fun dissecting this, Evan, but I'm equally excited to talk about it with you as well. Because, like you said, dog whistles galore. Apparently the media, the radical left, and Colin Kaepernick are destroying the fabric of America in Wisconsin, and Robin Voss and Devin LeMahieu are sitting on the side. So we got a political outsider who ran for U.S. Senate in 2004, 18 years ago, and has flirted with running for Republican offices, say, statewide ever since, but still is somehow a political outsider, is now going to be entering this pretty crowded primary field against former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, former Marine Kevin Nicholson, and current state representative Timothy Rantham. Four makes a party, I want to say, Evan. But this is, it's not a great launch video. I'll say, I liked it because it was short. It was 60 seconds. Yeah, it was nice and short. But outside of placating to some platitudes, I didn't really get a whole lot of substance out of that. Did you know that Wisconsinites are lazy, Evan? He called us all lazy. Unemployment is at a record low currently, and there is a record number of Wisconsinites working, according to the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. But if you put it in a 60-second sound clip and make it to the tune of probably some West Wing music, I would almost say that Sorkin might want to follow up with Michaels' campaign and see if he can find out if that was indeed some West Wing music, because that's what it sounded like to me.
Oh, and that Kaepernick dig.
Oh, you take a knee.
It's too perfect.
Way to bring a culture war. The culture war from 2016 coming into a 2022 launch video for Republican governor in the state of Wisconsin. I find it fascinating. I do. And so Michaels has entered the race, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. 844-967-2789. You can give Evan and I a call. We're talking about Tim Michaels entering this race, and I'm going to dive into the piece over at the State Journal because, like I said, I didn't know a whole lot about him, Evan. I'm learning as we go. Business owner Tim Michaels, the latest entry to the crowded Republican primary for governor, said Monday he will not be seeking large individual donations and will refuse contributions from political action committees and lobbyists, underscoring that the millionaire may be planning to run a largely self-funded campaign. Now, hey, I'm all for that. That's a great provision. No corporate PAC money, limiting under $500 contributions. Those are some populist ideas that I can get behind, and I can appreciate that. So we've got two pros.
I've also heard it before.
We've heard it before. But two, if he is, I mean, Trump is allegedly self-funding his campaign, but he also signs up his donors for monthly reoccurring gifts that they don't know that they're signing up for, and then all of a sudden they're getting charged $1,000 a month when they're meant to give $1,000 one time. And so I'm going to give Michaels the benefit of the doubt. Hopefully that won't be the case. Hopefully he'll have a little bit more competent team running his finances. But I can get behind that. I appreciate that. So he's scored 2 points, a lot of dog whistles. So again, he's way negative. I have very little. I will say right now that I have no intention of voting in the Republican primary. I know some Democrats out there are saying that they want to go and cause a little chaos, but that's not me. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be going and casting a vote in the Republican primary. But 2 brownie points for the fact that he had a nice, short, concise launch video. 60 seconds. That's about it. And that he's not taking corporate PAC dollars, and he's generally going to self-fund his campaign. But I believe we should get all politics out of money. Citizens United needs to be overturned. That would be better off rather than waiting for wealthy people to just agree that they were going to self-fund their campaigns and then limit any contributions that they did receive to small dollars.
And it's just a toxic cycle. You have people disparaging money in politics. So then you have very wealthy people born on third base that tell you that they hit a homer coming in and self-funding. The, I don't
well,
know.
It's not even just that. It's that Michaels could have yeah. Michaels. There could be a pro Michaels super PAC that raises as much money as they want yeah. from corporations and then just do messaging on behalf of the campaign, but quote unquote, not in coordination. And then it's totally fine with the current setup that we have for campaign finance in the country. And so that just needs to change. I give him kudos for saying that, but it needs to change. Campaign finance needs to change in this country. So diving back into the piece over at the Wisconsin State Journal. Again, Mitchell Schmidt, reading a lot of Mitchell's work. He must have been working hard over the weekend. The U.S. Army veteran who registered his gubernatorial campaign on Friday and launched a television ad buy over the weekend said he will never ask anyone for a donation and will limit individual contributions, which can be as large as $20,000 under state law, to no more than $500. So again, I'm just going to let everybody know, it shouldn't be the decision of the wealthy individuals that are running for office how they're going to regulate their campaign. There should be better regulations. $20,000 as the maximum contribution is insane. That is an unbalanced way to approach campaign finance in this country. Quote, "I'm not going to owe anyone anything," Michael said. "I don't give a rip about the lobbyists and special interests, the PACs.
They're
going to
owe me."
Yeah. Well, he's taken a page out of former U.S. Senator Herb Kohl's book. Herb Kohl said that he had the problems with campaign finance, and he said, "I'm no one senator but yours." And he was able to do that because he self-funded. He was a wealthy man, and he self-funded his campaigns. And so Herb Kohl, though, I believe, voted for the McCain. Feingold-McCain was the previous campaign finance laws on the books. Until Citizens United overturned decades of precedent to allow unregulated campaign contributions. Diving into the piece, before reaching the November 8th election, Michaels will face fellow Republicans in the August 9th GOP primary, which also includes former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, whose strategists say is the odds-on favorite to win the primary. The winner will face... Schmidt doesn't even name the other two candidates. Oh, he does, a little bit farther down. Oh, maybe not. Jeez. He's throwing some shade at Timothy Rantham and Kevin Nicholson there.
Yeah, man.
But the winner will face Democratic Governor Tony Evers, who is seeking a second term this year in the general election. I find that kind of funny. and then Schmidt identifies Michaels, 59, as the co-owner of Michaels Corporation, a family-owned international energy and infrastructure construction business. He last ran for office in 2004 when he lost to Russ Feingold in the U.S. Senate race. So this is who has entered the primary, and I find it fascinating, Evan, because just less than a couple months ago, in recent weeks, it was still believed that this was going to be more or less a straight shot to the Republican nomination for former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish.
Yeah.
She had essentially been running since 2018 when her and Scott Walker lost. She formed the 1848 Project and essentially had a campaign in waiting. She had all of the staff from that nonprofit. Then simultaneously, when she announced that she was running for governor, became her campaign staff. And she had been raising money, working on a quote-unquote a platform. And it was just expected that she was going to have a straight shot to this nomination. But I guess it just seems that the Republicans in Wisconsin aren't too fond of Rebecca Clayfish because we've got yet another candidate entering the ring. So do they think that Rebecca can't beat current governor Tony Evers? Do they not like her for another reason just outside of the thinking that she can't win? What is it exactly? I'm not sure. But we've got another candidate entering this pretty crowded gubernatorial primary. And I think it's going to be fascinating. I think it really is to see what happens now. Because Tommy Thompson decided not to run. And Tim Michaels was essentially waiting for Tommy Thompson to make that decision, which the former four-time governor has said he regrets. He's already regretting it. Tommy Thompson's family asked him not to run, essentially.
Sure.
And so when he decided he wasn't running, Tim Michaels says, "Well, I'm getting in the race." So we got a four-way primary. And the thing is, 33% or even less than 26% essentially could win you a four-way Republican primary. So I think this is going to get really, really interesting. And this is just something to keep an eye on, because the fact that we've got somebody that's running as a third outsider, both Nicholson and Rantham have declared themselves outsiders, and now we've got Tim Michaels saying he's an outsider as well. The lanes of this primary are fascinating, and we're going to be keeping a close eye on it here at Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. If you've got one more segment left in the day, if you want to join the show, give us a call, 844-967-2789. But Tim Michaels enters the Republican primary for governor this fall. Folks, we're going to be right back. Tangents with Luke and Brian. Big guy Brian is off for the week, so you're just stuck with me and Evan on the board. We're talking about some of the Wisconsin headlines going on after this long weekend. We've got Tim Michaels entering the gubernatorial primary, the Republican gubernatorial primary here in the state, as well as we've got some analysis coming out of several different outlets around the state in regards to the GOP drawn maps that were selected 10 days ago by the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. And so getting back to a little piece that I was referencing earlier when Jason called in, we've got new Wisconsin legislative maps create more districts with double-digit partisan advantages. So this is going to be the other interesting area to watch. Now that the Republican maps have been selected, along with the fact that we've got a very competitive four-way race for the Republican nomination in the gubernatorial primary. And so this is analysis outside of just the fact that it's more than a stretch, or it's less than a stretch, I would say. You got some of these outlets, Wisconsin State Journal reporting, and the individual at the Marquette Law School saying that it's a stretch for Republicans to achieve a supermajority in 2022. But this is interesting. The state's new GOP-drawn legislative maps widen the partisan advantage in several districts, with 9 in the Assembly and 1 in the Senate seeing their partisan lean increase into double-digit margins, making them far less competitive and more easily won by extreme partisans. By moving district boundaries, Republicans were able to strengthen their margins in some districts by packing Democratic voters into other districts, including 2 in the Milwaukee suburbs that flipped blue in recent elections. J. Miles Coleman, an associate editor with the University of Virginia Center for Politics Sabato Crystal Ball, that's the name of the center, said the GOP-drawn maps appear to symbolize Republicans, quote, cutting their losses with regard to recent Democratic gains among suburban voters, primarily women in the WOW counties of Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington. That's right smack dab in the middle of the listen area for the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Smack dab in the middle. Quote, there's not a single seat in Waukesha County that went to, quote, President Joe Biden, Coleman said of the GOP drawn maps. That's probably the Republicans saying, quote, this is our turf. That's the ramification of these GOP drawn maps. They've redrawn all of the district lines in the area of Waukesha County that was starting to lean more Democratic. One of the biggest shifts in the state occurred in the 13th Assembly District, which moves from a near-even partisan split under previous maps to a 16-point GOP lean, according to an analysis of the maps by Marquette Law School that used the results of the 2016 and 2020 presidential elections and the 2018 gubernatorial election as baselines. So that seat, currently Rep. Sarah Rodriguez, Democrat of Brookfield, flipped the seat in 2020 after narrowly defeating then-incumbent Representative Rob Hutton, Republican of Brookfield. Hutton had held the seat since 2013. Rodriguez, friend of the show, Representative, State Representative Sarah Rodriguez, who is running for lieutenant governor, leaving the seat open this fall, said the map selected by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, quote, shield elected Republicans from public scrutiny for another decade. As an elected official in a swing district, I've enjoyed knowing that I would be held accountable by my constituents, Rodriguez said. I know that it made me a better representative. So the one of the few representatives in a competitive seat in this last decade's worth of maps, stating how the competitiveness and the accountability of the district made her a better representative. But we have fewer of those seats now because you got nine state assembly seats and one state senate seat that are moving to even further double-digit partisan divides. So that is the piece over at the Wisconsin State Journal about the ramifications of these maps as well. Now we're going to the lines. We got Jesse of Madison chiming in. Jesse, what's on your mind today?
Hey, you know, Luke, if you don't like the way government's running, you should really write a letter to your congressperson or representative and let them know. I'm kidding, man. Here, my point here is this. My point here is this, is that, you know, when gerrymandering doesn't just hurt the voter at the ballot box, it really reduces overall civic engagement for everybody. And that's my point. You know, it's a cliche is, well, write your congressperson. That's what they always used to say. But now, I mean, Pocan represents me in Congress. Mm-hmm. And I know my assembly representative, Francesca Hong, they agree with me on 99% of the issues I support. And why would I waste my time to write them a letter? They're so safe in those safe seats. And if I disagreed with my rep and they were going to win by 10 or 15 points, again, it's not worth the time to engage with your representative no matter who you are. This hurts everybody.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely, it is a sign of less functioning democracy, Jesse. And it's shameful that that's what Republicans want. That is the result that we acted like it's a byproduct of this setup. The apathy that
it's
is created
feature,
from it is the design of the system. They want less competitive districts. They want to be able to choose who they are sending to these offices. They want to protect incumbents, and they want to be able to consolidate that for another decade. And it is disgusting.
It.
Yeah. And it's absolutely disgusting. And I appreciate the call, Jesse. And it's insane that is the byproduct that they're going for. And then you hear critique after these maps come out that it's like, oh, well, Democrats do it too. And, well, they would do it. It all comes up to elections. So you just need to vote for better candidates. And then you can do it next time you win. But in Wisconsin, there is no sign, any indication that there is going to be in the foreseeable future, even as the analysis from Marquette Law School showed, Democrats need a 12.4% margin to be able to win a simple majority, 50 seats, compared to the 5.6 that Republicans need to get a supermajority. It's insane. Real quick, before the end of the show here, we got Wisco Paul. Wisco Paul, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, just quickly, it's hard to run for office if you're 10 points down before you even get out of the gate. So it's a very difficult thing. Hard to get good people to run, but we're stuck with it for 10 more years. Thanks.
Absolutely, Wisco. It's insane to think that these last 10 years did not fly by. These last 10 years have been a struggle to be able to keep some semblance of function and governing going on here in the state of Wisconsin, and I have a feeling under these maps, these next 10 years are going to feel even longer. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this week, but that's okay. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. If you miss any portion of the show, go check out the podcast. See you tomorrow at 2 p.m.